Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of... Wait, Jesus.
This is the Just Riding Along Show podcast that we're doing.
Do we need to just start having Kenny do the introductions?
You know, I don't know why. I didn't like the way my voice sounded, and then I got a Facebook message because I was trying to track down. This is the Just Riding Along Show. It's episode 226 or 7. I don't know.
It's 227 now, I think.
I meant to change this, but then... It's an episode. This week's episode is brought to you by It's Thursday, Not Wednesday. And I promise, you would think that after over a decade, I would have figured this shit out, but I haven't. With that said, we are recording.
And by the way, your voice always sounds like that. So unless you're going to like change it, it's always going to be the same.
Should Matt have like a voice changer? We can just have him have a different voice every week. So I saw on one of those.
I mean,
like,
I guess it's good. If it's just until now that you're, you know, like 40 years old and now you just now don't like your voice, I guess that's good.
Because there's that, I've watched some of the scammer payback videos on YouTube where the dude has like a voice changer and he sounds like a little old lady. That would be hilarious if Matt sounded like a little old lady for the entire episode.
Anyways, this is normally where I would talk about my week, and I didn't do anything really cool this week. I think
that helping me was really cool.
I don't have any good stories this week for myself. I am going to start by saying I don't have any bike content this week because... Wait, had you shot the mountain lion on the last show?
Yeah, so last Thursday when we were recording.
It was like that. It was that day.
Yeah, okay. Well, that Friday, Andrea and I went out for a little jaunt in the woods and snagged the mountain lion. And that was that. And totally... unrelated to the short little walk in the woods bringing out a small cat.
Just a wee fellow.
On Saturday, I tidied up my Subaru had been handshake sold, and on Saturday it was sold, and I got up and I cleaned all my personal stuff out and vacuumed it and cleaned up the interior. They didn't care. I did. It just seemed like the right thing to do. And then what else did I do? Did I go play with a tractor? That was Sunday. I went and played with Tom's new tractor, which I hope I get to drive it this weekend. And then, let's see, I went to work, and work was...
Work?
I mean, work was work, but we have been... It's actually a little bit... It hasn't really been winter here as normal winter would be, but we have had enough cold and then some like wind and just not very nice days that we're finally caught up, and in the process of catching up, we're going through and doing the things that one would want to do in wintertime at a small local business, like organizing things, cleaning things up, labeling things, doing a better job of stocking things. So stocking as in like, okay, any small business is going to have those growing pains. And even though this shop has been around for many years, it's just one of those things where, I don't know, like you end up in a situation where as you grow, you find inefficiencies, but while you're busy, you deal with those inefficiencies. And I think this is probably any business of any size. And then during your off season, you try to rectify those inefficiencies. But one of the things that we committed to is when I came on last year, I helped identify a number of things that needed to be, let's say, addressed immediately. But since then, we drew a line in this, like at some point we were like, okay, if it's not done by this day, we're just going to live with it. Because if we start moving shit around in the middle of the busy season, no one will know where anything is. Everybody will be unhappy. Nothing's good. And we're just slowing down to where we can start fleshing out some of those other little problems that we addressed over the year and streamlining things. And we've got a really, really solid group of dudes and a gal now that came on that are really wanting to like help. And I think anytime there's change, people are going to be like, I don't know. And then they see how those changes helped and they're more open to new changes. And I don't know. I'm in a pretty good mood about things. So that's great. I didn't ride my bike a single pedal stroke. I told Andrea earlier, like in the last half hour, like I felt bad that all week I wanted to ride my bike, but I didn't, like, mentally, I was like, I want to go for a ride. Like, and then I was just like, fuck, I'm so tired. And then I, like, realized that after what we had done, I needed to not ride my bike this week. So, but I'm really excited about the coming week because, unless it's changed in the last 24 hours, which it's Colorado, it could have, but I mean, the weather looks, it's going to be some good bike riding weather this weekend, and I'm going to do some. So hopefully I don't slash any more tires. I'm finally done blabbing. Someone else to go.
I'll go since my week aligns with yours a little bit. So last Thursday.
Oh, you let Kenny go because then yours, and I'm going to need to talk a lot during yours.
Okay. All right. Well, Kenny, you go then.
I rode my mountain bike.
Jesus. Crazy. Fuck.
I know. I went with a buddy down to St. George, just did a day trip. I think it was on Sunday. First random thing, because it was honestly fairly noteworthy because it was ridiculous. I very rarely go out to eat. You know, it's just way too expensive. I'm usually disappointed. It's just dumb. I mean, I will. Like, if I travel, I'll go out to eat. And it's fun. You know, if you're with another group of people, you're out of town, like, maybe people know a cool place to go. Like, I'm totally down for that. But most of that stuff, like, for me, going out to eat pretty much lost its charm in, like, after my 20s. Yeah. Like, in my 20s, I went and ate at every freaking restaurant in the world. And I'm not talking about, like, crazy expensive places, but, you know, plenty of nice steakhouses and this and that. I'm not a foodie. So the ultra expensive stuff doesn't interest me in the least. Anyway, I kind of got that all out of my system in the 20s, just like I drank every microbrew in the world in my 20s. And yeah, it was entertaining. I drank some cool stuff, drank a lot of garbage. And I don't know. I'm just kind of like not that interested in it anymore. Anyway, with that said,
wait, hold on.
Don't go out to eat.
Just a small tangent. Did you ever? So in Memphis, we had Flying Saucer, and I think they're like in a few other cities or like maybe Nashville or something too, but like, did you ever go and get like one of the really stupid expensive beers that, I don't know, it was like $40 or $50 for a bottle?
Oh, yeah. I drank them all. Like, I got the plate. You know, oh, yeah. You do all the 200 or whatever.
Yeah, I never got the plate, but I did go like one time just by myself. I think, I don't know, I just went by myself and like sat at the bar and had like a $47 bottle of beer and like talk to the bartender, you know, they're nice to everyone. And, you know, if you're a lady in there by yourself, like they'll just chat with you. And it was actually like kind of nice. I don't think I'd do it again, but like it was nice at the time.
Oh, I had a lot of fun. I mean, we spent untold hours at Flying Saucer. A fun fact, I never technically got my plate because I never did the party because we were going to do a massive party with like three or four people all finishing it that, you know, all doing their 200 at the same time. And they give you like a couple $100 bar tab or something like that. And they'd like throw a little party for you. I just never did it. So technically, I'm at $199 still. Oh, in fact, man. If anyone's bored, you can go on Google Images and go to the inside of the Flying Saucer downtown in Memphis. And you have to go back. Like you can pick what year the picture's from. And go back to like 2006 or something, and you'll see my name on the 199 board. It's on there for like 3 years.
Kenny, you should go back. No, I don't really want to do that. I was going to say you could like take a trip to Memphis when I go back, and we can go and do your 200 beer party.
Yeah, it's possible. You have to like plan it out. I think you have to give them like a couple weeks or
like a month. I'm gonna go sometime around the end of March after I have my left carpal tunnel surgery. I'm gonna go like while I'm recovering.
Yeah, I'll let you know next time I'm back in Memphis. I will go eventually to go hang out with buddies, but I've kind of already got vacations this year all planned out. And unfortunately, I don't think Memphis is one of them this year. So anyway, this is a very, very long story to say that I don't go out to eat that often anymore. And my buddy wanted to go get breakfast like on the road. And there's a new restaurant by my house. Neither of us have been to it. And I was like, yeah, sure, fine. Like, we'll go check it out. And it's kind of just a breakfast place. And it's right next to a Starbucks, which is pretty ballsy, honestly. I don't think that's going to go well for them. Anyway, I'm like, hey, I'll get some French toast. It was extremely expensive, but I'm like, hey, I haven't had French toast in a while. It's like not something. $16.
Okay.
For fucking French toast. It was literally.
Did it come with eggs?
Well, I mean, like, it's supposed to. That's like the definition of French toast, is it not?
No, no.
But there was like
was it a French toast like platter where it had like eggs and bacon with it?
No.
It was just fucking.
No, no. It was two pieces of bread.
Oh,
I'm not kidding. It was two pieces of bread cut diagonally to make four individual slices,
triangles,
if you will. Yep. Made four triangles. There was no brown sugar, no powdered sugar. It was like just kind of semi-burnt, not really flavorful, whatever egg batter they were using. And that was literally fucking it for $16.
Did they even warm up the maple syrup for you?
I don't know. It was like in a little plastic thing. It was hard to... It was like very... It was very watery.
God, not even like a
syrup.
Not even like a ceramic crock.
No butter.
Did he flip the goddamn table over?
It was ridiculous. Well, I didn't know because we were semi in a rush. So we were going to eat this on the road. So we got it to go. Like 10 minutes down the road, I open it up and like start eating it in the car. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, what in the world? What restaurant could possibly do that? Like,
was
they
it even
are
like
gonna
a thick 100%. Slice of bread, or was it just like a plain, like a Wonder Bread slice?
No, it wasn't. I will give them some credit. It wasn't Wonder Bread thickness. It was double Wonder Bread.
So it was like Texas toast thick.
It was Texas toast thick. They had some other fancy name for it. Brioche or some shit. I don't know.
I mean, that is like a fancier bread, but...
Yeah, my nickname for it is fucking trash.
I mean, brioche is good, but like... Yeah, I mean, I think you still could like flip a table over having like two slices with nothing on it.
Yeah, $16. So, yeah, anyway. World, you can go fuck yourself.
Dude, for $16... I mean, honestly, you would have been better off just going next door and getting a coffee and like a $7 microwave sandwich at Starbucks.
Yeah.
I mean, do you consider going to Starbucks and like when you say you don't eat out, like a Mavericks burrito, is that on or off the table for you?
Well, it's not that I don't ever.
I know. But
I mean,
no,
I don't
no,
really,
no, no.
I don't eat out, as in like I very rarely go to sit down restaurants.
Okay.
But even that, I very rarely get anything from any store, like any food.
Okay.
I mean, I will every once in a while. It definitely happens, especially traveling. Like pretty much every weekend, I'm like in the car, either riding moto or mountain biking. But I also just bring my own food. I just have my old trusty air fryer in the trunk and something to toss in that thing. You know, could be
some dino
little
nugs,
mini burritos. It could be some cheese sticks. Could be some Totino's pizza rolls. I don't know. Make up whatever other frozen thing you can put in there. Tater tots.
Jalapeno poppers.
I made some mean chili cheese tater tots the other day.
In the air fryer?
Incredibly good. No, I air fried the tater tots and then I just had the chili in a can and put some spices in there and melted the cheese in the air fryer last step. And boom. Chili cheese tater tots cost like $2. It's great.
I mean, but
so,
going
yeah.
back though, like if you grab a Mavericks burrito, are you bummed? Or do you just not have that?
No.
Like
not usually. And I think I'm not as bummed because I know if I'm getting semi fast food style stuff, like yeah, if I got a burrito from a gas station or like, you know, a taquito from the hot dog roller or something like that. Yeah, I'm probably not going to be that disappointed.
The bar
That's
is
the problem
set,
is that
though.
Food is pretty much better.
Well,
than this like restaurant that I went to.
It's better dollar like when it's
No, I mean
cheaper.
Flavor.
Well, no, hear me out though. Like
I've never made French toast in my life. Like maybe I like helped make it one time when I was like 8 years old or something.
Dude, I'll show you how to make
it. Was
French
not
toast.
It was not a thing that our family did, but I've eaten plenty of French toast because I've been to plenty of breakfasty places.
Wait, your family didn't make French toast?
No.
My family didn't make I didn't have French toast till I was like out of the house and like cooking for myself.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
It's so much work.
Dude.
Why would you do that?
It's not really that much.
No, that was like one of my family staples was like we would do a breakfast for dinner sometimes, or we would do like a Saturday or Sunday, like kind of a crappy day outside. Like my mom would make French toast for everybody. And it was so cool because my dad would like cook the bacon and scramble eggs and stuff, like make a big bowl of scrambled eggs for the table. And then we would all sit down and my mom would just make French toast and be like, who wants some more? And slap it on our plates and cook French toast until everybody was like kind of satisfied. And then she would like join us and like she would like eat her eggs at the stove, you know, but like our kitchen dining room was one room. And like, I don't know, it just in my little brain, everyone had like French toast parties at their house.
I get it. No, I totally get that style. We did that with like pancakes, right? Where you just keep cranking out pancakes until people stop eating pancakes.
No, we never made pancakes. Pancakes are stupid.
All right. Hey, fair enough.
French toast fucking slaps.
French toast is easy, Kenny. You just like, you put an egg in a bowl and like pour some half and half or milk or whatever and like cinnamon and sugar.
And a little vanilla.
And a little vanilla, and you like soak the bread in it for like a minute, and then you put it in
a
pan or on a griddle or whatever, and just like cook it until the eggs are done, and then you got French toast.
Does my house seem to be the kind of house that has vanilla in it?
I will, Kenny, the next time I see you, I will bring you homemade vanilla.
I don't want vanilla. I hate vanilla. It's nasty, man. I'll throw that shit out.
I will bring you vanilla and show you how to use it to make good French toast.
You don't just drink it straight out of the bottle, Kenny.
Okay, so you went mountain biking.
I got a weird thing about vanilla. I'll eat vanilla ice cream, like I can tolerate it. I'm not a big ice cream person. But there's something about like that super concentrated vial of anyway. Not a huge vanilla fan for some reason. I get it, like it's supposed to be in certain things, but I don't know. I've never installed vanilla into any of my food I've made in the past 20 years.
How would it make you feel to know that when I did Moab Rock Stage Race, my only chills was a 24-pack of vanilla goo?
That, like, actually sends chills down my spine. Oh, my.
All right.
So that was my.
Other than the really sad.
We went mountain biking.
How was the mountain biking?
We had really, really disappointing breakfast and rode in St. George. We rode the usual suspects. We did the Zen Trail. We did Barrel. Unfortunately, my buddy forgot his giant bag of all of his clothes. So we had to go to the bike shop and buy bibs and stuff. So a little bit of our ride got cut short, but it was fine. Like I got all the riding in that I wanted to do. The Zen Trail, for those that are curious, has always been very difficult to officially find because there's no signs on it. And there are still, I think, maybe no signs, but the old trailhead is all torn up. They are building houses for like the first maybe, I don't know, eighth mile in all directions of that trailhead. So up onto those mesas. Which, on one hand, everyone gets all pissy and you can get sad and all this shit. But, like, at the end of the day, it's fine. It just is what it is. What they've done is made a new trailhead. It might be temporary. I don't know. It's by that substation, for anybody curious. And they made some new trail. And the trail, and now, in its entirety, is probably a mile or two longer than it used to be. So, like, boo-hoo, you lost, like, a little bit of the climb in the beginning. But it's, like, all the same rock shit. Like, it's fine. And the new section has a couple little cruxy parts that are pretty difficult. So yeah, rode Zen, rode Barrel. The bike was good. I got a couple facts here. Did some service on my bike, which I have not done in a long time, but that's really because I don't put miles on it. I think the bike's got maybe 750 miles on it, somewhere in that ballpark. So not quite like full first suspension service. And it's been working great. I really haven't had to do anything to it, which is awesome. I decided, all right, I'm going to top off all my sealant. And my sealant's been lasting way longer than I thought. I don't ride it a ton, but I figured it'd just be congealed at the bottom of the tires. It sat for like 8 months and it was pretty much all liquid. There was a little bit of residue in like one spot, but nothing bad. So I topped off my sealant. I like washed the bike, cleaned the drivetrain, made sure all the bolts were tight. My derailleur was about to fall off, so it was good that I tightened that down. So this is what's crazy. I decided to do a free hub body service. It's a DT350. Super easy. Done a million of them and have a little trouble pulling my free hub body off. You know, that O-ring just sticks on there. I do the free hub body service and I can't get my inner star ratchet out. It is like sunken all the way down into the hub. So I'm thinking like, well, that's really weird. Maybe like the little coil spring collapsed or it got like jammed in there or something, but it was like sunk way down in there and I couldn't freaking get this thing out. I'm like using a pick. I made a little magnet. It would like stick to it, but it wouldn't pull it out. It was crazy. So I've got like a jam. It was like an EXP, except it's not an EXP. So I stopped being a dumbass for a second after like 20 minutes of dicking with this thing And I forgot that you can pull that little aluminum spacer on the axle out because it kind of looks like part of the axle. It just, my brain did not even comprehend what was going on. I was just trying to get this damn pawl out. Anyway, I pull that part out. Luckily, I've got the hollow pawls so I could get a pick in there. And I pulled this thing out. And guess what?
It was rusted.
Nope. There was no spring in there.
Wait, you just been rocking one spring?
No shit. 750 miles. I'm running one fucking spring.
Did the wheels come on the bike?
No, there were wheels that I bought. They were my street wheels for my Levo SL. So I had those 2.5 semi-slicks on there.
But you
so they had a couple hundred miles on that bike. I'm not saying that I never had the free hub body off to maybe it came with a Shimano one. But I'm 99.9% sure I never took that free hub body off of that. In fact, I'm pretty darn sure I slapped that 1052 GX cassette on there and never touched it. But I could be wrong. Is it possible I dropped that Paul somewhere in my garage floor or something? Yeah, it's possible. But like my garage is also pretty clean and I've never come across a random DT spring that I'm aware of. Anyway, so there is a small possibility that that wheel came from the factory with one freaking spring in it.
Wow.
But I just want to tell the world that even with a missing spring, that DT350 works better than your hub.
Wait, so what if they have
a
350?
Did you put a spring in it?
What's that?
Did you put a spring back in it?
Yeah, I put a second one in there.
I don't.
But no shit. I rode a friggin' e-bike for 750 miles. Not a single skip, pop, noise, nothing. Thing, and it sounds like a normal DT. You would have no idea. And I was running on one friggin' spring. So pretty crazy. Ain't that some shit? I don't know if it's supposed to work that way. I don't think it is. But it somehow worked.
All right.
Yeah. But I think that's it. Nothing else eventful on that trip. Bike still worked pretty good. Still not super happy with that fork. I may still try to get it tuned. It's an EXT Era 2.1. Hmm. It just needs less compression damping, just a little bit, and it needs way less rebound damping. So it just packs up is the only problem. It's fine on big hits, but small successive ones, it just packs up. So, but there's not like a fork I really want. I thought about trying a podium, but after all of our customers came in with the podiums with blown seals, I kind of don't want a podium, and they're really expensive. And unless I do one of those conversion axles, I got to do a 20 mil front hub. And then I thought about, man, maybe I'll do a boxer, maybe like the new boxer. That could be really cool. But then I still got to do a front hub. And then
what about like a Zeb?
I can't do bar spins anymore.
You put a Zeb on it?
I could do a Zeb, but everyone that I talk to with a Zeb says the small bump compliance is terrible.
People with an e-bike or people like on a normal?
People in general.
Okay.
Well, you got to remember though, Kenny only weighs 160 pounds riding a normal bike.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely see that. Like, I would.
Right. Because aren't you like 140 pounds?
No, no. I used to be, like in my racing days. I was about 145, is about as light as I ever got. And I stopped riding and I've been hovering in like that 155 ballpark.
Oh, okay. Then Kenny would be the equivalent of like a 170 pound rider on a normal bike. That's what I was going for, is like I was adding. You know, take the weight of a normal bike or subtract the weight of a normal bike from the weight of your e-bike and add it to a Kenny. And that's sure. What Kenny on an e-bike weighs riding a normal bike. And you're still really small. You know, like I'm 190 now. So like, and oddly enough, like now that I've started moving a little bit, like I don't understand how I used to weigh so little.
Yeah, metabolism's a crazy thing.
No, I mean,
I still...
Like, I don't know how I functioned. Like, I know that I'm so much stronger than I used to be in terms of, like, not on the bike strong, but, like, pick something up.
Being
strong.
Able to pick up a mountain lion and carry it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get to that soon.
We will.
Yeah. So, anyway, I kind of want to do a fork, but I don't really... Nothing is jumping out at me as really good. So, maybe I'll send my fork off to a tuner and see if I can get someone to mess with it. I think it has potential, without a doubt. It's definitely not like garbage, but if it's not like super warm out, it's, and it was 60 something degrees. It was far from cold or anything, but it's just, well, it's two clicks too slow on the rebound, and that bugs the shit out of me.
Wait, the rebound's too slow. Why don't you just put thinner oil in the damper?
Yeah, great question. I guess I could.
Because that would...
But that's a very, very reasonable idea.
It's what I used to do for, remember like back in the motion control RockShox days, I did that to my fork, and then a friend of mine who's really small, I mean like 105 pounds or something, like she was having problems, you know, like she didn't like how her fork felt, and I did the same thing. I put, I don't know what it, they came with like 10 weight or something, and I just went to whatever the next weight down
like
was.
From 10 to 7.5
sure.
or something.
Yeah, or like from 10 to 5 or something. I don't know. I just put like lighter oil in it, and it felt great, and I did that to hers, and she's like, wow, I feel so much better on my bike now.
I think that's a good idea, but this thing's a closed cartridge situation, not dissimilar to, I don't know if it's got weep holes and stuff like a grip. It might be more like a fit, or, well, I guess probably more like a charger damper.
I mean, you can service a charger damper.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can clearly service this thing too, but like, I mean, this thing's made in Italy, man. I don't think I want to touch it. But maybe I'll look up the service procedure and tackle putting some lighter oil in it. That's a good idea. I like that.
Because
that would solve
you want
both
it,
the compression and rebound problem.
Okay, that's what I was about to ask. You want it to be easier to move both ways.
Is correct. Because it's full minus on compression and rebound, and it's still too stiff.
And it sounds like, I'm saying this for listener land, if you're in that situation where you're all the way out of adjustment, if you change the oil to a lighter oil, you might find yourself sniffing the other end of adjustment, but you're actually adjusting. So, like,
yeah.
And it would probably take changing from like 10 to 0 to be in that situation. But
sure. And it was a complaint with that fork, is that the adjustment band is way too narrow. If you are too heavy or too light, or your riding style doesn't match it or whatever, it's basically made for a, you know, I don't know, 180-pound rider plus or minus 10 pounds, period. That's it. You could adjust the air spring in theory for any weight you wanted, but that damper is not going to play ball. But other than that, I still like the bike. I've been riding the trail pedals. I've been trying the one-ups, and they're fine, like from a performance standpoint. Like they clip in and out. They're adjustable. Haven't had any issues. No play in the spindles yet, but I've got, you know, 100 miles on it or something, nothing crazy. And they're cool pedals. I just don't know how much I love the trail pedals. For sure, at least once or twice a year on the small SPDs, the race ones that I've been running forever, I'll be trying to be half clipped in and like slip a pedal and like smash that thing into my shin. And that's no fun. But I could also smash this trail pedal that has giant spikes into my shin as well. What I'm getting at is the flat foot ability, or the you're half clipped in down a crux section or whatever. That part is way cooler about the trail pedal, without a doubt. But goddamn, I smash those things into the ground all the time. It is noticeable how much more I'm hitting shit with those things compared to the race pedals, which also shouldn't be a surprise, right? Like that's the trade-off. It's heavier and you're going to hit more shit. I just don't know if the benefits of having the bigger platform for those few times in a ride that I put the middle of my foot on the pedal real quick just to like get down a little thing and then properly clip in. So anyway, I'm weighing those pluses and minuses, but they're decent pedals for people looking for a clip-in trail style pedal. The one-up seemed to be decent. I think they had a recall there at some point, but it sounds like they got it all figured out. That's all I got. That's my riding.
All right, so last Thursday, which you all heard that episode on Monday, it was last Thursday, I'd been mountain lion hunting, and I got my first mountain lion. And I was using hounds, which I'll explain a little bit just because I had a listener that commented on my post about it on Instagram wanting to know like kind of the logistics of how you would hound hunt. Typically, what you would do is have your dogs in your truck, you drive just back roads and stuff, and you look for a track. You look at it and you say, that looks like it's a large lion. There's no small tracks with it that might suggest that it's a female with kittens. You can kind of evaluate right off the bat do we want to track this or not? Like, do we want to hunt this or not? Which is a really, really hound hunting. I know a lot of people, like, right off the bat, people are like, it's not fair. It's giving you an unfair advantage. For something like a mountain lion that is so elusive, hunters were not, and there are some states where hunters are not allowed to use hounds. Oregon, I think Oregon or Washington, I don't remember which one of those Northwest states, you can't. It really impedes the ability to manage the population of mountain lions. And why that is important is because of humans. And you hear people say, like, well, they were here first. We live in their area. That's true. But that's also why they have to be managed. That's because mountain lions have a very vast territory. They are territorial creatures. Occasionally, you might see, like, siblings that hunt together. You might have, like, one, you know, a juvenile that hangs out with its mom a little longer. Or, you know, like, its kittens that kind of, like, hang out with mom a little bit longer. But generally, they are solitary animals. They hunt by themselves, and they are territorial. Males especially will fight. A male, if it comes across a female, it will kill her kittens, because that's what animals do in the wild. When they, a male animal will kill the offspring of a female so that they can mate with her and pass on their own genetics. That's just how nature works. It's not a nice, nature is not nice. There's no hospice for animals in the wild. Like, the animals that die of old age in the wild die a very, very unpleasant death. So, I won't get into that, but it involves coyotes eating you asshole first while you're still alive. Anyway.
You just got into that.
Yeah, I won't get all the way into it, though. But they're very territorial. So the more humans expand into their territory, the fewer mountain lions the territory or the ecosystem can support without them either, you know, getting it, like, killing deer in your front yard, eating your pets, things like that.
Eating a person.
Eating a person, that happens occasionally, rarely, but it's more often. It's,
I mean,
like,
it happened recently.
It did. It happened recently in Colorado. The more humans get into their territory and live in their territory, the fewer mountain lions we can have. And that's just how nature of mountain lions works. There's nothing we can do other than have fewer humans that can change that. So when I say we need hound hunting in order to manage the population of mountain lions, then that's what I'm talking about. Like, they need to be managed because of the influx of humans into their territory. If you look at states like California, where you cannot hunt mountain lions, before mountain lion hunting was banned, there were X number of lions killed by hunters every year. Now that hunting is banned, the same number of mountain lions are killed every year, but they're killed by trapping and euthanasia by the state, or through traffic accidents, or they're killed by each other. The same number of lions are being taken out of the population. They're just being done in a way that doesn't involve, like, hunters eat mountain lions. That's a very popular misconception, is that they're not eaten, that they're just killed and displayed for a trophy. It's not true. And now they're euthanized and incinerated or dumped or whatever in those places. So we need hound hunting. That's what I'm getting at. It does give you an advantage. It's not an unfair advantage because they are incredibly difficult to hunt without animal assistance. So the way it normally goes is you would look for a mountain lion track. You decide, yes, we want to track this. You would put the dogs on it. They have GPS collars. You follow them either by road or on foot. You follow them. And when they stop, generally, you know, if you're looking at it on GPS and they stop in a spot, it's like they have it in a tree. You go there and you say, yeah, we do want to harvest this lion. That's the nice thing about hounds is you have the lion in a tree. You can say this is a female or this is a male. Usually you only harvest males. Sometimes females are harvested too. But, you know, you get to make that evaluation and that decision because you have that time and that space that you can actually observe them. My hunt was a little bit different because I was by myself. I found this track and I was probably 2 miles from a trailhead and I didn't have phone service. I sent an InReach message to a friend of mine that has hounds and I said, hey, I found a track. It's really fresh and it's pretty big. It should be a tom. Can you come out here with your dogs? He didn't respond immediately, so I just started tracking the lion like I've done in the past. Maybe another half mile later or so, he messages back. He says, "I'm working, but I will send a friend of mine out that has dogs." And I sent him the GPS point, and I told him, "I'm going to stay on the track because it's so fresh. I might actually find the lion before they get here. So I'm going to stay on the track, and when they catch up to me, I will just let the hounds take over, and assuming the houndsmen are going to be somewhere close, you know, I'll just join up with them." That's not exactly what happened, but the dogs did eventually catch up to me, and I was really, really close to the lion because they literally, they passed me, and I'd say within 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, they had the lion in the tree within a quarter mile of where they first passed me. So I was very, very close. You know, saw the lion in the tree, confirmed, yeah, that's a big lion. It should be a male. I mean, I'd been looking at the tracks and the scratches, like the markings that it made and stuff. Like, you know, it's a male lion. It's big. It's in the tree. Went ahead and shot it. Well, it falls out of this tree and slides down this incredibly steep hill into this canyon, which is where we pick up from last week. It's in this canyon that's, you know, it's covered in snow. It's very, very slippery. Actually, the way that I got into the canyon was just by sliding down into it. There was no walking. And I determined relatively quickly that I am not going to move this out on my own. It's starting to get dark. And I had talked to the houndsmen and they said, you know, just come out. The dogs will follow you. And, you know, I eventually met back up with them at the trailhead. So, you know, that's where we were last week. And so the next day, Matt and I went out with a sled. Because ideally, in that situation, you would have skinned the lion and quartered it and been able to pack the whole thing out, like, on back in backpacks between two people. Since it was late, and I tend to cut myself with knives when I do things, I decided I did not want to do that out in the field in the dark with a headlamp. I had a headlamp. But, so Matt and I went back. We took a sled because it was very cold that night, and it was basically a catsicle when we got to it. So there was no skinning and quartering. It was just a chunk of ice. So we put it in the sled, and it was about three quarters of a mile.
How did the sled get into the woods?
Matt put this long, like a, I don't know what, it's like
it's
6 feet.
It's a 5 foot long sled.
5 foot long sled. We did determine when, once we got home, this lion was 113 pounds gutted. So it was probably about 130 to 140 pound mountain lion, which is a nice mature male mountain lion. And it took us hours to get it from where it landed. We couldn't take it out the sides. We had to just go down the canyon. And it was in a burn area. And the canyon had flash flooded. So it was just logs and brush. And it was like this hell canyon. And it took longer to move it three quarters of a mile to the trail than it did to actually, once we were on the trail, we were able to just mostly drag it. And it was, I don't know, half a mile uphill and then mostly downhill the rest of the way to the trailhead. But it took us a very long time. We got to a point where we were maybe like 300 yards from the trail, and the canyon was totally blocked by logs. The sides were...
Well, hold on. Let's go back. When you say it took us... You didn't give people times. It took us about 3.5 to 4 hours to move it three quarters of a mile. And then 3 hours to go 3.5 to 4 miles.
Yeah. But yeah, we got to a point about 300 yards from the trail where we just could not proceed with it in the sled any longer. And I was just like, you know what? We're just going to have to cut it up. It's going to destroy the hide. But that's going to be the only thing we can do is just quarter it and put it in our packs and carry it the rest of the way out. I resolved myself to this, and Matt said, no, we're not going to do that. And he slings the whole lion in his pack.
No, it wasn't that simple. There was a lot of bickering, and I was like, just put it in the backpack and let's see if I can pick it up. And at this point, I didn't know what it weighed. And We got it on my back.
We got the lion on Matt's back, and he crawled up the slide, the side of the canyon, after losing both of his micro spikes.
Yeah, at some point in the day, I felt a micro spike come off when I was probably mid-thigh deep in this snow-drifted, like, little ravine we're in. And I dug for, like, probably 5 or 8 minutes looking for it. Like, I heard it come off, felt it on my boot coming off. I took my foot out of the snow, went hands first into the hole that I'd made. It didn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Also, she skipped the part where at one point we had like a probably 7 or 8 foot tall waterfall to go down.
We did.
And I cut out this long piece of rope that I had brought with us. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And I got in position where I was like wedged in behind a log, and Andrea like nudges it over the edge, and I lowered it down.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of bickering. And then the reason that we couldn't go forward anymore is there was drainage, let's call it drainage east and drainage west came together. And where they came together, pandemonium. And it was like as if someone took a box of toothpicks and threw them down, but they were full-size trees.
Yeah.
So Andrea's like, you're not going to be able, no. And I was like, just put it in the backpack. We're going to see what happens. And we put it in the backpack, and it was.
And you can see, like, I don't know, maybe I'll post this photo on JRA Instagram. It's on my Instagram. The cat is still very much frozen and is like horizontal, like sticking out, I don't know, a foot on either side of Matt, probably.
Yeah, so I'm going through, like, I finally get up this hill, and I have to go through some scrub oak. But to go through the scrub oak, I'm now, like, 5 foot and change wide. So I have to, like, turn sideways, or, like, I look back, and there's, like, a scrub oak, gamble oak, stuck in the cat's mouth. And I'm, like, trying to get it out, and I'm becoming a very tired boy.
He was very tired at that point.
But we got it. We got it to the trail, and the first bit was very hard, and then we hit a rhythm, and we got out of there. I eventually lost my other micro spike, not in a hole.
Yeah. So, yeah, Matt, clawed his way out of this canyon with, you know, 100. I say with the pack and the cat and everything.
I called it 130.
Yeah, it could be easily 130 pounds. So he climbed out with 130 pounds on his back. We got to the trail, put it in the sled. I started pulling, he was pushing and steering, and
we got into a little argument again.
Yeah, that was when we were both trying to pull it at first, and that just didn't work because we couldn't get into like the right rhythm of like steps and pull strength. So I finally was just like, you know what, I'm going to pull it really slow, and you can help me like in the hard spots, the steep spots, but it's just going to be easier for me pulling if I'm just doing the work with like a little bit of assistance, because otherwise I'm like slipping and losing my balance. And yeah. So yeah, we pulled it out of there, and I literally felt like, I mean, I know I'm in a much different fitness level than I've been in the past, but I felt like after those 2 days, I felt like I had raced 2 100-mile races in a row. Like physically, like I didn't have much appetite. I was just hot and sore all over, like sore to the point of where like my skin was sore. I don't know. Like there are probably a few people listening that understand that.
I get it.
Like you can't even, like just your clothes touching your body is uncomfortable. Yeah, I felt like that for a couple of days. And yeah, it was rough. It was really difficult, but I'm really happy. You know, I got the mountain lion all, you know, like got it skinned and butchered and everything. It's in the freezer, and yeah, we'll have some mountain lion roast later this week probably.
So now into new shit. Anybody want to talk about the Arid prototype carbon bike? Doesn't look cool.
I hadn't seen it.
There.
That's a really dumb prototype cover, by the way.
Yeah. Is Kenny still there?
Yep, still here.
Do you care about the Arid? I don't care about the Arid. Why did I bring it up?
Where are you seeing it in particular?
It's on the old pink bike. It's just some real kooky, eccentric. Oh, dude, it's like an old Ibis. It's got an eccentric pivot in it. Oh, God.
Isn't that fancy?
I kind of forgot about those eccentric pivots They were...
I wanted to.
Less than ideal.
I saw this and it brought it back to me. Also, didn't the eccentric pivot run on just like a bushing?
In the Ibis?
Yeah.
No, they were two gigantic bearings that were similar in construction to... Do you remember the huge bearing on the original i9 hub?
Yeah.
They were that size.
Every bike shop has at least one of those somewhere, like in an old falling apart baggie in their bearing container.
Yeah. Had a customer come in today with a one of one hub, and it spun equally in both directions.
That's a feature.
It's not ideal.
Oh, you mean the free hub? Got it.
Yeah. You could pedal in either direction, and the rear wheel would not move.
Okay.
We talk about something more exciting.
Yeah, I'm building up to that. I want something good. I mean, I think this stuff...
Also, why would you have a protective frame condom?
That says prototype?
That says prototype on the side.
Because you want people to take pictures of it.
That's like actually... I feel like it's almost weird that you have to put that on there because people probably wouldn't take pictures of it unless it said prototype on the side.
Yeah, like someone might see you at a bike park and be like, the fuck does that dude have on his bike, and take your picture to like make fun of you later, but no one's going to really pay attention.
Yeah. That's just making fun of the whole culture of, oops, we accidentally leaked that, when they're the, you know, the company's the one that put it out there. Just funny.
Like riding a bunch of SRAM Eagle in full SRAM gear before Eagle was released.
Sure.
But they didn't get their picture taken. Andrea just saw them.
I forgot when I saw that.
Pueblo.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. The Eagle Tap Day. That was good.
You want to talk about the new Levo R, Kenny?
Sure. What would you like to talk about?
What are your thoughts? I did not watch the webinar, and I haven't really... I've been pretty busy since it launched. I mean, let's see. I'll run through the pink bike quickies. 140 fork, 130 rear, 29. Full 29. Oh, Jesus Christ. I didn't realize
that.
Yeah,
that's why I said...
Full 29. That's like probably the biggest takeaway.
Oh, my God.
I like this. I like how this bike, like if I was actually shopping for a new e-bike, which I'm not really, I'm happy with what mine does. Like I'd be looking at this. I mean, I know that it surpasses all of the regulations, like what you guys were talking about last week. But I mean, other than that, it looks like a pretty solid bike.
That aside, forget the 850 watt thing for a second. On paper, it confused me a little bit. It's like the Levo Gen 4 is really heavy. This is not that much lighter. And then you're going to take travel away from it. It's still got the full power motor and a giant battery. It just seems like lopsided a little bit on the weight and the amount of power it makes, but it's still heavy.
It says the lightest build.
It just seems like a weird bike.
The lightest build is 18.8 kilograms. So let's say 90.
I think it's like 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Which is hardly light, but...
What is the lightest e-bike? Like a full power e-bike, I don't even know what mine weighs. I've never weighed mine, but I know it's fucking heavy.
Probably in that like 46 ballpark. For a full travel, full power, relatively modern e-bike, I'm going to guess in the mid to upper 40s.
You mean for light?
As light as you're going to go.
Okay, yeah.
To give you reference, my Kanevo SL is 40 or 41 pounds, but it's an SL. And my old Levo SL was like 36 or 37. So you can definitely go way light on an SL chassis. But anyway, on paper, to me, the Levo R seems weird. And I think a lot of people on the internet would agree it's really weird. And all the reviewers have been saying a very similar thing. On one hand, I feel like Specialized has been telling them to say what they're saying. I get that vibe. But people are saying that it rides great. Like as a package, like don't look at the specs. If you just didn't look at the specs on the bike and you just rode the bike, that it rides really good. Which it could be a completely fair assessment. I really hope that that's the case. Outside of pedaling one around a parking lot, I have not put any dirt miles on one. I'm hoping it's really good. People generally seem to like it, but on paper, it's a weird one.
The full 29 is really, really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think on paper it looks good. Just because I'm not necessarily really into like the super long travel stuff. Anything that I have not liked about my e-bike, as far as like, I don't know, the front wheel kind of coming unweighted and being like a little unpredictable and, you know, like climbing and stuff in technical terrain. Like, I feel like that would just be worse if you had a longer travel bike, like the front wheel just wandering around and just not having quite enough weight on it. So I feel like having a, it's not even short travel, it's like a mid travel, like a trail bike travel e-bike. I feel like that's not a bad thing.
I think the issue you might be running into are just wheelbase problems, chainstay / wheelbase issues where it's too short.
Maybe.
That's just a guess.
Yeah, I don't even...
For what it's worth,
I don't know what the geometry
I've pointed
is.
My Kanevo up the steepest garbage in the world, and I don't know, it feels great. I've never ridden a bike, I don't think, in my entire life, outside of maybe some really weird twitchy XC bikes back in the day. But I never rode anything that I felt didn't climb right, if that makes sense. I never felt like I was going to flip over backwards or didn't have control over the front end.
Yeah, and my fork problem, too, I think might have also been a little bit of a... I run the air pressure in the fork a little lower, so it just has a little bit better. Because it was kind of like a small bump. It's been kind of a small bump thing with mine, because it came with a Fox 36 on it, I think. Matt knows more about my bike than I do.
It came with an e-bike 36.
Yeah. And it would just, you know, at slow speed, like I'd hit a bump with the front wheel climbing and the wheel would just teleport off in a direction. And I think it's a lot better with the Lyric on it now. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I would really like to try one out. And, you know, the power thing doesn't really matter to me that much because, like I've said in the past, I'm not really that interested in riding an e-bike on normal trails. You know, if I'm riding an e-bike, it's on gnarly roads or moto trail. So, yeah, like, give me all the power that's out there.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
No one told me it was full 29 and I didn't use my eyeball holes. Now I'm actually excited.
Yeah, I definitely like the 29 thing.
It is pretty weird, though, the last two generations of Levo. It's mullet or go home. Pretty crazy. And this is the second generation of Levo. Sorry. Even though this is a revision of the fourth gen, but the last two generations, as in Gen 3 and Gen 4 for the first however long
well,
it's been
Gen
out, 4 months, 6 months.
Well, Gen 3 and it's in perpetuity, and Gen 4 it released was mullet.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I still prefer 29 front and rear. I know it's not as playful and whatever, but also on paper, I want to think that mullet would be awesome, right? Like, the more I ride motorcycles, they've clearly got it figured out. There's a reason why motorcycles have not swayed much from the formula that they've landed on, and they are mullet. So, it's kind of weird. But most of the mullet bikes I've ridden, I haven't been, like, gaga over them. They're not terrible. I just didn't love them as much as I thought I would.
All right.
Yeah, I think that depends a lot on your terrain, for sure. I know mullet and 27.5 aren't the same thing, but I have had the same problem the times that I've ridden a 27.5 bike that Matt had with his mullet bike, is that you feel like when you do get into that really, like, chundery stuff that wants to slow your wheels down, like, the rear wheel just hangs up a little bit and slows you down. But if you're on really smooth stuff, like if you are familiar with trails in Salida, I took a couple of 27.5 bikes out just as demos on the Cottonwood Trail, which has a lot of just fast and flowy stuff and a little bit of rock, but it's mostly just fast and flowy downhill. And it was awesome. Loved it. But then as soon as I got on Greens Creek, which is really rocky, gnarly moto trail, it sucked. I mean, I sucked at riding it. I definitely watched the time that I did that. I watched Parker, who was at the time the Rocky Mountain rep. I watched him on a 27.5 bike, like, just, you know, launch over all of that shit and just not touch it. And that's really the way that you...
Parker would rally the fuck out of that Thunderbolt, like the 2017 Thunderbolt. That yeah. bike got rallied to fuck it back.
Yeah, like, I mean, he was really good, but if you don't have that skill, if you're used to just the heavy plow, like the 27.5 wheel is just not the way to go. So, yeah, it was, you know, just a rider preference thing for me. So, yeah, I'm glad to see this in, like, 29 all around.
You have any other thoughts, Kenny?
No, those are my thoughts. People, again, most reviewers I've read say that they like it, but until I can get some dirt time on it, it is hard to say. I've spent a reasonable amount of time on G1 to N3 Levos. I have not spent any time in the dirt on a Gen 4 mullet, non-R, and clearly not the R yet either. So hopefully I can ride those and report back.
Dude, aren't you the buyer? Just order a bike and don't receive it and take it home.
That's fraud.
Come on, dude.
We'll probably make a few demos and maybe throw a couple of R's in there.
All right. You should do that.
I will.
You want to talk about the new Boxer?
Sure. Is it the same one we saw on eBay?
Yes.
Did they ever figure out what happened there? Are you allowed to talk about any of that stuff, or they don't know, or they just don't
care? It's 100% the speculation that the internet had.
So kind of lost container. A dude buys lost containers and sells the stuff.
I asked my people.
Your people.
About it.
You were working on trucks with Troy.
No, I was in his garage.
We should probably keep names out of it.
No, I guess a way to put it is the way he described it is like, yeah, that shit happens. Like, apparently it's not an anomaly. What occurred is not an anomaly. The anomaly is that it was unreleased product. So, but I mean, yeah, dude, I worked for the Pros Closet. We shipped not a SRAM amount of stuff, but, you know, a lot of stuff. Shit just goes missing. Like, sometimes shit just disappears. It goes into the FedEx and it never comes back out. And we were only doing...
There were stories in Memphis about the people that worked at the FedEx hub, because that was a big operation, right? Like, UPS and FedEx's presence in Memphis is gigantic. They basically have their own completely separate airports, or parts of the airport. I guess they land and take off from the same runways, but like all the buildings are directly there, and it is a humongous operation. And workers would just like unload stuff and I guess see roughly what it was or where it was from, or they were tipped off or whatever. They would drive their little like tug full of little train cars, and they would just like drive it over to the fence and just start throwing shit over the fence. And then they would just go like pick it up after their shift. Just throwing boxes over a giant airport barbed wire fence.
Yeah, I mean, like, shit happens, okay? Like, stuff gets lost. The anomaly was it was unreleased, and it was, yeah, I mean, I don't know how, like, I don't want to be dismissive, but...
But they didn't find, like...
There was no...
It wasn't some internal person that was, like, disgruntled, and they, like, you know, it was in their possession, and then they were like, fuck this, and they sold them to somebody, or they were, like, directly stolen from the company or from a van or an operation. It was just, like, in mass transport, these things were lost. Is that accurate?
That's what it seemed like, because there was...
Okay.
Like, it was a non-event. The event is just that, like, it was out there, if that makes any sense. Like... Yeah, it sounds like this kind of thing. And again, I can speak directly about my time at the Pros Closet. Like, boxes just disappear. And sometimes I truly think that a box just got totally munched and munted, and they just fucking threw it away. Because they would do an investigation and be like, no, we have no record of this bike. And I'm like, it's a fuck, or this package. And I'm like, it's a fucking bicycle. It barely fits in most SUVs. This box is gigantic. It didn't just, it's not under a conveyor belt somewhere. You know, it's not a CD case size padded envelope that's stuck down in a dust catcher somewhere. Like, it's a fucking bike. And, you know, this fork, I'm sure, like, for those of you that don't know, forks come in 10 packs. You can get a 10 pack of forks and a 25 pack of shocks. And I think it comes down to like, how much do you want to pick up? Because yes, if those of you that are home are like, well, why would you need less shocks or less forks than shocks? Yeah, pick up 50 forks at one time, blow your back out. So I'm sure just like a 10 pack got, who knows, maybe a 10 pack puked one out on the floor. And they were like, we don't know what the fuck this is. Put it in that pallet of stuff we sell at auction. You know, who knows? Like, all I'm speaking on right now is speculation, like saying that like it was a 10 pack, it was part of a 10 pack, they got lost, whatever. But like that kind of shit, it sounds like that shit just happens. Like, do you understand how many products SRAM makes and ships every year? Shit just disappears. So I don't know. All that is a long way of saying, like, it was kind of like a meh. It happens.
So should we talk about this fork?
Yeah, it has a linear XL. You got more room in the lower.
What does that mean?
It means that the lower air compresses less as the fork compresses more because it has a larger air volume, and it affects the progressivity of the fork less.
So I thought that it had, the oil channel things.
Well, it has oil channel things too, but the big visual thing is but it has more air volume and it has oil channels, I guess.
All right, can we talk about the bird wheels? Are we done with the Boxer?
Okay, fine. Kenny, have you seen the new bird wheels?
Launches.
I saw a couple articles on them. I guess I'm just not that interested.
I think they look.
They're 1,000 gram wheels. How are you not interested?
30 mil internal, 1,000.
Like, I just can't be. I can't be convinced otherwise. I don't want fabric spokes. Like, I don't know how else to say it. I'm just not interested in it.
I'm interested.
Also, have you ever seen bird wheels that have been ridden for a season or two?
Like mine, yeah.
I don't know. The ones I've seen come in the shop, I've seen a few of them. And yeah, you got to throw them away.
Why?
So you either got to... They're destroyed. They're like got literal spokes hanging on by a thread. And I'm not trying to be funny.
Hmm.
They just... They get freaking munched. I don't know. It's not for me. I know you guys like them, but it's not for me.
One thing I do think is cool is that the hubs that they have made to go with these are built in a way that every spoke in your wheels is the same length. So if you do have one that's hanging on by a thread, you only need one spoke length in order to repair your wheel.
All right.
I think they're really cool. And I do like, I would say that an advantage to the fabric spokes like that is if you are someone that, I don't know, if you're bike packing or whatever and you carry extra spokes with you, that's way fucking easier to carry like a little baggie with a fabric spoke or two in it than it is to actually carry like a... Cause that was something I had to figure out when I was like trying to prepare for the Tour Divide that wasn't. It was like, where the fuck am I going to keep an extra spoke? You know, it's like you have to somehow attach
it
to...
If you rode a Surly, you could just lace it into the chainstay.
Yeah, sure.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I think it was the Long Haul Trucker.
Yeah, they had one that had a spoke holder spot in the chainstay. That would never fall out.
No, it had like a J-bend hook and you tightened the nipple.
Oh, I didn't realize you tightened the nipple in there. I never actually saw anyone use those.
Kenny's just not impressed. Yeah, look at this.
These have So they say these have enhanced impact resistance when compared to the standard Hawk 30. So does that mean that these rims are stronger?
The new rim is, that was something I read elsewhere, is they quietly said that their new XC rim is stronger than their old Enduro rim, which is what I had on the Stump Jumper.
I want a set of these. I don't even have, I could put them on my single speed. I was going to say I don't have a bike to put these on, but, oh yeah, I see that now. Matt's showing me the Long Haul Trucker spoke holder.
And what are these things called? Hawk 30 Gold?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Who makes their rim hoops?
They won't say.
It is an Asian carbon manufacturing partner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that everyone's rim?
I mean, I get it. Like, that weight is impressive.
With 24 spokes. I mean, okay, so let's back up. Let's lay out the details here. 1,400 grams used to be a pretty impressive weight for a carbon wheel set with metal spokes. You could get lighter for sure, but that was like pretty standard. Like 1,400 grams is pretty good. That's what the NB
sure.
XC25s weighed. And then, you know, the Control SL started sniffing around like the low 13s, right, Kenny? Maybe?
Also, I've got a nit to pick here. Why are they telling me that it weighs 1022 without taper valves?
I don't know.
Because that's what it weighs without taper valves.
Yeah, but you can't fucking run it that
they
way.
They told you how they weighed it, though. I think that is important.
I mean, that's good, but that would have come out once people actually weighed them, right? But every other wheel on the planet, when they give a weight, it's with tape and valves. I understand the pedal thing on bikes, even though I think clearly they should be weighed with pedals, but they don't know what pedals you're running. And yeah, I guess, do they not know what tape and valves you're running? Here's the thing. If these wheels come with tape and valves, then fuck you, because they probably do come with tape and valves. So why don't they just say, well, our wheels without spokes weigh 820 grams.
I mean,
that's fucking great. I don't give a shit because I can't run my wheels without spokes.
All right.
Anyway, it's a nit. It's a nit. And I know that I don't have a lot of love for bird wheels, but I don't want fabric spokes. But continue with the specs.
So wheels got down in that like 1300-ish, you know, they were starting to be 1300. And then Specialized just like, bam. 1,000-gram wheels, but they're 20 carbon spokes. I mean, I know you said that the bird wheels after two seasons are showing age, but we don't have two-season-old control
World Cups.
I am not saying that the new control SLs are going to fare a whole lot better than these. I think people just need to understand that these are, in my opinion, essentially disposable, or at least be prepared that you're going to pay wheel build labor times two plus spokes every couple seasons, which is fine. If you want to just calculate that in, that's fine. And is it going to be completely unreasonable? I'm guessing it's going to cost you, what, $500 or $600? That's not chump change, but I don't know. I've seen enough sets now that I was not inspired to go out and buy some.
I kind of wonder what that hub is like. They come with that Talon.
Well, the Talon hub is just because Ratchet is no longer under trademark or patent. The patent expired. So it's a DT-based hub.
They said it's a 70-point of engagement hub.
Right. But the Ratchet ring in the Talon hub is much larger in diameter than the original Ratchet ring. It's closer to like a DEG Ratchet ring size.
That's what it looks
and
like.
And DEGs
yeah,
are
which is reasonable.
90. Points of engagement. So yeah, I mean, I think that they've just, I'm interested. I don't know that I'm really, I understand I just vouched for them being, you know, non-DT hubs, but I just really want to ride DT hubs.
And I will say, I would give bird wheels a chance. The only redeeming factor I could see is if there is truly a damping improvement on the wheels. That could be a positive, but for me, the price and the burliness, you know, spokes not getting frayed and broken and all that stuff. I just don't know that ride compliance would outweigh those downsides. I'm all about light wheels, but if you can just get a super bomber, great wheel set that's 1400 grams and just runs traditional stuff, and if you break a spoke, you go to a bike shop and like it's fine. Getting this last 5 or 10% of performance seems to be costing a lot of other stuff. And I know that's not a new thing. That's just what's in my brain.
All right.
This should be our last new shit because we've been recording for a while.
We've been recording for 2 hours now, yeah.
It's been 3 days. But what do we have any listener questions?
There's one, but it's not super time sensitive and we can just do it next week. Because I think we might have had a Patreon question too. And there's some other new shit that's kind of cool, but we have been recording for a while.
All right. Well,
yeah, I mean, there's some SRAM brakes. We can hit those later. There's plenty of stuff to talk about. So maybe we just can hopefully remember to come back and hit this stuff.
Yeah, maybe. You probably. I mean, we'll at least go over the SRAM brakes. I think that's a cool thing. But
there's one thing I wanted to talk about that I found today. I was on the Maxxis website. I ripped a hole in the tire on my Canyon, and I still haven't replaced it. And I probably need to do that tomorrow so I can ride mountain bikes this weekend. And I'm browsing the Maxxis website because I'm comparing, like right now, because I've heard the mountain lion story before, opened all this stuff up while Andrea was talking. I have ground control. Oh, that's why that tire's so heavy. I just realized I accidentally opened the grid one. I have Dubnatals. I had a Recon Race, Recon and Aspen open at one point. And then I'm like browsing through Maxxis mountain bike tires and I'm like, damn, they fucked up. They got one of their motorcycle tires in their mountain bike lineup. No, the Max Venture and the Max Venture MT, straight up fucking dual sport tires that come in 20-inch size for your e-bike. You should look up the Max Venture and the Max Venture MT and tell me that that does not look appropriate on a motorcycle.
All right, looking them up right now. Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that. I mean, that's pretty street oriented, I would say.
Well, look up the MT.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at the Max Venture. That's very kind of super moto-y. Mm-hmm. And that sucker is pretty heavy.
1,700 grams. It gets better, Kenny.
For
the Max Venture 20x4. MT.
God, I need some of those for
you
the green
throw
machine.
That like
All
a,
right, let me look.
Like a frisbee at someone and knock them out.
The Max Venture MT, they don't even tell us the weight.
That's not
without category.
No.
Oh, man, that thing's cool.
That is a motorcycle tire, dude.
That is, for us, pretty much a motorcycle tire. You are correct. That's wild.
I left one thing out of the mountain lion story. When I was tracking the mountain lion, I thought of this because I said without category. When it exited the creek bottom drainage that it was in and went up into the mountains, the path that I followed was half of a mile going up, and it climbed 1,000 feet of elevation gain in half of a mile.
That's serious.
That was serious. But are we ready to read patrons and wrap it up?
I ain't reading shit.
I'll read patrons. All right, so our patrons, starting at $10 a month or more, have Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds' Crusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds' Mustache, Taperboar Pro, My Pal Dal, MTB Shenanigans, Hey, which one of you is Clayton? Cam Irish 1, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, Kenny Lovestain, Ride Time Extended, JC, Gordon, Josh, Fart Noises, Tom's P, Ryan, Bill, Aaron, Beaver Pelt Pocket Pool, Ty, Noah, Cool Beans.
Ooh, she nasty.
No, my name is Clayton. Frank the Tank, Goat Roper, Autonomic Dysfunction Makes You Unsympathetic, ChatGPT, Candace, Cockfit at $11.11 per month, Dean at $12 Australian, Patamelon Disco Ball at $14 Australian, and at $20 a month, we have Brian, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month, A Pole Dancing Squirrel at Your Local Denny's, Harley at $30, Troy at $31, and Six Pack Outdoors, now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast. At Fitty. I think I said those all in one breath.
Shut her down.
Impressive. Shut her down.
Okay, bye.
Thank you all for listening, and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along Show.